tragic day in Afghanistan. U.S. troops leaving Libya. And wait, we had troops in Libya? We'll break it all down on today's Hot Zone.
This is the Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Hey folks, Chuck Holton here. People sometimes ask me why I choose to spend my time in so many of the worst places in the world. I mean, it's hard to explain to someone kind of who hasn't had the chance to experience it. And I think the best answer I can give is that it gives me a real sense of meaning and wonder. Meaning because I feel like it's my job to shine light on the dark places of the world, and wonder because I get a deeper understanding of the history of what we're living through, a front row seat. Plus, I love the creative process. I think if you sent me to these places and took away my camera, I wouldn't be able to stand it, because the act of documenting the world around me is a deeply creative one that I really enjoy. So I guess it comes down to creation, redemption, and a higher purpose, which is a good metaphor for life, I guess. Well, I want to bring you along with me, and I want to let you see not only the finished product, but the process as well. And that's why I started this podcast. So I'm excited about the way it's growing, but it would really mean a lot to me if you could just take a few seconds and like it and share it with your friends. For example, we've got a little over 700 followers on our Facebook page right now. My goal is to get to 1,000 before our 100th episode. Will you help me do that? Go to our Hot Zone podcast page and like it and share it. Also, if you enjoy helping others, that aspect of the podcast, I know you'll be glad to know I'm making arrangements for a medical mission project to the Darien jungle here in Panama just in the next few days, where hundreds of migrants are showing up every day, half dead from exhaustion and sickness. So if you're interested in taking part in that, get in touch with me and let's see what we can do together. One thing you can do is go to patreon.com/hotzone and subscribe. Those of you who support the podcast there are really seriously making a difference in the lives of people, and there's much more to come. All right, on to the news. A roadside bomb went off just outside Bagram Air Base in northern Afghanistan on Monday, where my son Mason happens to be serving right now. It resulted in 7 American casualties, 3 U.S. troops who died in the blast, as well as 1 military contractor. 3 more troops were wounded. This makes 7 deaths this year from the United States, which puts us on pace to have more U.S. deaths in 2019 than we did last year. That's a function of the Taliban stepping up their attacks to try to assert their power in negotiations that they're having with the Afghan government, peace negotiations, sort of ironically. The Afghan president, Ashraf Ghani, recently laid out a 4-step plan to put an end to the conflict, which, as you probably know, has been going on for like 2 decades now. Some of his ideas are pretty good, which include weaning the country off the massive amount of money being spent there by our government. And some are kind of pie in the sky, like getting Pakistan and Iran to stop their meddling in Afghan affairs. So good luck with that one. IEDs are terribly destructive devices. They're usually homemade over there. And they've been responsible for the majority of the 2,400 American deaths in Afghanistan during the war. I've been in 3 IED incidents myself, never hit directly, thank God. But let me tell you, it's really annoying when people you don't even know try to blow you up. I mean, how rude. So imagine being a young Marine going out on patrol every day and living with the fact that just about every step you take outside the wire could be your last. You might think these guys would start to harbor a deep and abiding hatred for the Afghan people. But what I've found is that when you ask them what keeps them going, they tend to talk more about the people they care about back home. Here's an example. Listen to this short interview I did with a Marine Lance Corporal on patrol in Helmand Province over 10 years ago.
One of the biggest things is found out my wife was expecting, and she was carrying her health insurance and the like. And So I looked into the best occupations I can get in order to get the best health benefits and stuff for my family.
Oh, okay.
So working for the government seems to be one of the best ones.
What's that bicycle doing here?
So, I mean, people might think that coming over here for 7 to 9 months isn't quite the family life, but in the long run, it's worth it. Yeah, when you
definitely a stable job, right?
Oh yeah, definitely stable. I mean, I enjoy it. I mean, it definitely has its days that I don't, but when you put it in perspective and the fact that so many people went before you to fight for your freedom, you know, you can't help but be willing to give a couple of years of your life to fight for, in my case, my daughter's freedom.
Right. Well,
that was my first trip to Afghanistan alongside Oliver North. And during that same trip, North's convoy was hit with an IED, and his cameraman, Chris Jackson, who happened to be wearing my body armor, was in the vehicle that got hit. I was only about a kilometer away and came within minutes with a quick reaction force.
We still gotta have some security to this.
My wife is a Buddhist from Thailand. Yeah. My grandmother's Roman Catholic. And I live in Jerusalem, so I had everybody there go to the synagogue for me. I don't know what God it was, but some God took care of me today.
Well, you can add to that that I was praying for you right at that moment.
Thank you very, very much.
Two Marines were injured and one pretty badly, Courtney Roush, who lost his foot. Now, I filmed the aftermath as the ammunition in the Humvee cooked off and melted down.
Can you tell me what happened?
We going down the road and we hit one. And next thing I know, it's a big smoke cloud. And just try to get out of there as fast as possible and get the rest of our guys out.
What position were you in on the vehicle?
I was in the gun.
You were up top?
Yes.
What, did you see anything?
I didn't see nothing until it was too late. Just a big big boom and a big cloud of black smoke all of a sudden. Excuse me.
Okay, tell me your name, please.
Corporal Donald.
What was first name?
Joseph.
Joseph Donald?
Yes.
Where are you from?
Fairfax, Virginia.
All right. Bet you're looking forward to getting home to your family, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
This first time you've been in one of these?
What, IED blast?
Yeah.
Directly, I've been, I had them hit me on the sides and right in front before. But that was the first one that actually detonated right under us.
And I'd only been in Afghanistan at that point for like 3 days. There'd be two more incidents like that on that trip, fortunately with no more injuries. And my point is in bringing this up is that the troops putting their lives on the line in service to our country are facing their mortality on a daily basis. But they don't do it out of hatred for the enemy. They do it out of love for their country and for our way of life. It's not about who's across from them on the battlefield. It's about who's behind them. And I think that that's a great example of what it means to be a warrior. A warrior cultivates that kind of love. He has to be able to turn on the tap of hate when fighting for his life, but the hate has to stay subservient to the love for your tribe and your country and your family. And if ever the hate overcomes that love, you're no longer a warrior, you're a savage. And that's just my opinion. Now, I want to show you a couple more packages that we sent back from Afghanistan when I was working with Oliver North as his cameraman. One of the great adventures of my life was doing so. But the thing that strikes me looking back at these packages 10 years later is that we're still trying to accomplish the goals we were trying to accomplish back then. It turns out getting the Afghan army up to speed where it can protect its own country has been a much bigger job than we thought it would be.
This is a glimpse of Afghanistan of the future. It's been a kinetic war for the U.S. and NATO forces, and now it's being turned over to the Afghans. This unit right here is an Afghan Special Forces unit, accompanied by U.S. Special Forces. And we're about to go to an Afghan local police checkpoint that was hit just a few hours ago with enemy fire.
This is the one that actually got attacked earlier this morning. We're just going to go in here and find out exactly what happened.
Afghan fire being fired at Afghan police. They're the new target for the Taliban because they're interrupting what the Taliban would otherwise be doing in little towns just like this.
This is one of our secure villages, so what we're doing is we're just getting out and just talking to the people, seeing what they have to say, because again, we're here for the people.
But this is an all-Afghan operation. If we're going to win this war, this is the way it's going to happen. The Afghans protecting fellow Afghans from the Taliban and from foreign enemies.
From a special operations base in eastern Kandahar province, Afghanistan, I'm Oliver North for Fox News.
Now, the Taliban wants to bring Sharia law to all of Afghanistan, and I think in light of how tenacious and pervasive their ideas have been, the U.S. should have simply defeated them the first time in 2001, 2002, and then left the country altogether. offering advice if the government asked for it, but otherwise just leaving them to their own devices with the promise that they could remake their country any way they saw fit. But the moment they posed a threat to the U.S., we'd be coming back and wipe the slate clean once again. Now, think of the blood and treasure that we'd have saved doing it that way. Now, don't get me wrong. We've done a lot of good for a lot of people in 18 years in Afghanistan, and that counts for something. And here's a package we did from an embed with a medevac unit, very much like the one my son Mason's serving in today.
This is an HH-60, the 41st Expeditionary Rescue Squadron, the Pedros. Here at Kandahar, their mission is saving lives. Tech Sergeant Oberstar, tell us how you got to be a PJ.
First, I came into the Air Force about 17 years ago to be a dog handler. And then after being in that career field for about 5 years, I wanted to try to go ahead and come on over to pararescue. So I tried out for it.
You guys just saved a little Afghan child.
It's an auto vehicle accident for a four-year-old local national, and it's a ventilated patient. And it's worsening, so who knows what we're going to get when we get there.
Transport this intubated patient that's on a ventilator, bring him to the Roll 3 here in Kandahar, which is a higher echelon of medical care.
His father was terrified.
Father was upset, naturally, but we're going to keep him on board our aircraft, and we're going to try to provide some level of comfort for him as well, and have him as an escort for his son as we bring him to Kandahar, which is winning hearts and minds here in Afghanistan.
HH-60 helicopter, about $20 million. Training for the air crew, about the same amount. Training for the PJs, about $5 million. Saving the life of an Afghan child, priceless.
The bottom line's this. Whether or not you and I think it's been worth it, the troops who keep going back say it is worth it, and we should respect that.
My name is Captain Matt Lampert. This is my second combat deployment to Afghanistan. And I just wish American people would understand there's a lot of people here that still believe in what we're doing out here and are willing to come back again and again to prove that point.
Kind of hard to argue with a guy like Matt Lampert. Okay, let's look at Libya. If you recall, back in 2011, the Obama administration declared that Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi was an illegitimate leader and needed to go. We embarked on a bombing campaign at that point from Sicily to speed up the process, and I went and covered that at the time. But it contributed to the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi. And just an aside, I wonder how many of the politicians in the United States who were all for Obama's use of military force to depose a dictator are now dead set against Donald Trump taking any action that would rid us of Nicolas Maduro. That might be worth looking into. Anyway, the second and third order effects of our intervention in Libya have been overwhelmingly negative. First of all, Libya had huge stockpiles of weapons and munitions, which when Gaddafi fell, got looted by very bad people in that area, and much of it ended up in the hands of ISIS jihadists or Al-Qaeda, and it enabled them to wreak havoc all over the region. The rest went to a bunch of warlords who are now fighting amongst themselves to control Libya. So there's that. If you didn't realize we had troops in Libya, you're not alone. I don't think most Americans realized we had some people there. The truth is, we've had a small contingent of U.S. forces stationed there for a couple of years. Special ops guys, mostly, who have been assisting local forces in fighting ISIS and Al-Qaeda in the region. We've dropped lots of ordnance on people who needed it over there. But now we're pulling those troops out. Why? Well, all of a sudden, there's a powerful leader who's marshaled his forces out in the eastern part of Libya and decided to say mine to the rest of the country, including its vast oil reserves. See, the UN has been backing the sort of weak government in Tripoli that's called the GNA, or the Government of National Accord. But a powerful general out in the eastern part of the country last week launched a surprise offensive to take over control, And that has the UN running around with its hair on fire and evacuating their peacekeeping force, which, by the way, almost never does any peacekeeping and any good at all. And the U.S. decided to sort of get out of the way and see how things play out. This whole mess is yet another consequence, in my opinion, of Barack Obama's feckless and limp-wristed foreign policy. Gaddafi was a bad guy, sure, but the Obama administration's naive support for the Arab Spring uprisings have led to literally hundreds of thousands of deaths across the Middle East over the last 10 years. That supported the rise of ISIS and generally made the world a more dangerous place for Americans and everybody else. If you ask me, history is not going to be very kind to the decisions made by the Obama administration in the Middle East. I think the lesson that we have to take as a nation is that we have to be very cautious about who we support, and even more so who we give weapons to in conflicts around the world. My opinion is that if it's worth doing, we should have the courage as a nation, and our policy should be that we will do it ourselves. If Gaddafi needs to go that badly, then we should be willing to put our own sons and daughters in harm's way to depose him. Whenever we support other factions because we're not willing to do the dirty work ourselves, that might be a good sign that maybe it's not worth doing at all. That's just my opinion. Anyway, that's all I've got for us for today. Thanks for being a part of this journey with me. We've got a lot of great content coming up in the days ahead, so stick around. I'm Chuck Holton, and this has been The Hot Zone.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.